Spring has sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. Hello and welcome to the all-new EDP F1 podcast. My name is Michael Bailey and I am here to discuss the iconic Monaco Grand Prix weekend with our panel of guests for this week. It'll be final introductions this week, hopefully, before we settle down into a bit of routine. But I'm delighted to introduce who we have around the table here at Arch and Towers today. First of all, we have Perry Hamilton. How are you, Perry? It's a fine day.
Very well, and such a fine day it is as well, Michael.
Summer has arrived. Summer has arrived. And making their podcast debuts here for the first time, we've got John Luton. John, are you well?
I'm very well, thank you, Michael.
Good. Good to see you here. And also Kyle Cumbers. Kyle, welcome.
Thank you much.
Good, good man. Nice to have you all on board. And I suppose we should get right into it from the off. It was the Monaco Grand Prix, gloriously sunny weekend for the most part, and Mark Webber producing his second win in 3 years in Monte Carlo, the sixth winner in six races for the new season. Guys, your thoughts on the race and the weekend? The weekend probably better than the race in the end.
I would say so, yeah. I found qualifying more thrilling than the race. But, I mean, we know that about Monaco. We know Monaco's always going to be a difficult place to pass. You're not going to see a huge amount of action there unless it rains. And at that point, it's not the kind of action that I would say purist motor racing fans would like. I mean, there's plenty of action when cars are slipping and sliding and smashing into each other. But that's not really what Formula One's about. Formula One's about precision moves and things like that and everything being under control. So, yeah, there was a touch of rain, but not really enough to cause chaos, enough to fool some people into making some stupid pit stop strategies, but not really enough to fox the main squad of teams. So, but I mean, overall, you've got to enjoy Monaco just for the fact that it is Monaco, haven't you?
It is. It's just a beautiful weekend. I love it. I mean, I have a caveat here in that I was at the Superbikes at Snetterton on Sunday. So I watched the rerun of the race afterwards. And I did fall asleep twice during it. I couldn't work out if that was because the race wasn't as good as the previous five or I was just tired. It could have been either. How did you find the race, John?
I thought the race was good, but it promised more than it actually delivered. As in, the excitement, you were waiting for something to happen, and it kind of... It did become a bit of a, you know, procession just going round by the end of it. There was the little hope in the middle where the strategy would kind of kick in. If the rain had came just before Vettel and Button had pitted, then there was that little hope that it might get a bit more excitement, they might get the jump on it, or, you know, Button in the end had a pretty disappointing race. But if the rain had came just before he pitted originally, he'd have got the jump on quite a few people and nudged him up to the top 10.
Absolutely, absolutely. I suppose that was the trap that Toro Rosso got wrapped up in, and and poor old Jean-Éric Vergne, who changed to intermediates and went backwards, pretty much.
But I do kind of think that from the qualifying, I find it a bit annoying when they get into the top 10 shootout and they don't bother going out and doing a lap. So Vettel essentially got the advantage of being able to choose which tyres he was going to be on. And in the end, if the rain had came, he would have gotten a kind of unfair advantage because of that. So
I might come on back onto that because I was thinking about a theory on that one. So we'll have a look. But Kyle, Mark Webber, second win at Monaco, first of the season. Tell you what, he's in a pretty decent shout, isn't he?
Yeah, he's qualified Vettel again. He's done a few times this season. This season looks better shape than last season. Like I say, he controlled the race throughout, especially with the train of cars behind him. And he dealt with the strategy, the weather. Yeah, perfectly.
He did. It's interesting, I suppose. Even if you're trying to be objective, there's always some drivers you'd like to see win sometimes.
Yeah.
I think Mark just seems to fit in that category for me. I'm probably not supposed to say that, but
no, I mean, I agree with you. I like Mark Webber, and you kind of feel that he does get lost in Vettel's shadow, which is, you know, why we sit here and my esteemed colleague says he's out-qualified Vettel, as if that's his benchmark. Well, actually, he's also out-qualified all the other drivers apart from one as well. And that's what you kind of tend to miss on that, is there's plenty of other fast people out there, especially this year. The gap isn't as big as it has been in the last couple of seasons between the rest of the field and Red Bull. And he's still managing to put that Red Bull up there in the first couple of rows of the grid. Now he's started bringing home the serious victories and the serious finishes as well. He could be in with a good shout to finish, you know, certainly ahead of Vettel in the championship, if not as a champion. I know it's very early to start making those kind of predictions, but that's what we could be looking at. He's a very fast driver, and he's always seems to be quite a humble chap who's got always got time for a word for the media and things like that. He's not one of these aloof drivers that a lot of people have problems with because of their apparent attitude. I'm not naming names, Fernando Alonso, but he's one of these guys that just seems to be quite genuine. And like you say, you're always happy when you see him get a win.
And like Mark himself, who never seems to be that happy when he gets a win. I love it when he gives his post-race interviews. They're just brilliant. There was another classic for the BBC after the race on Sunday. Let's have a quick little run over qualifying then, shall we? As you said, Webber was on pole almost by default in a way, because Michael Schumacher, well, screwed it up in Barcelona, basically. Yeah. He was still paying the price for running into the back of Bruno Senna. I was really disappointed that Schumacher, when you have to say the big genuine moment where we got to see a glimpse of the old Schumi, and he doesn't then get to see it out by, you know, starting on pole. I was just really frustrated. What did you think?
I still haven't forgiven him for 94 yet. So,
oh boy, this could be a long podcast. Could be a long one.
So I'm not a huge Schumacher fan.
It was good. Get it out of there.
I didn't feel it was good to see him pole, but it kind of felt, it didn't feel right, sort of, oh, Schumacher's back on pole. You kind of want to see Schumacher the way he was, winning 7 championships. You don't want to see him, oh, congratulations, you got a pole.
Yeah.
It sort of, yeah, it just doesn't feel right, really.
It almost feels like you're patronising someone, I suppose, when they're a legend in the sport.
It's gone from being where you're just, to being like a big achievement, whilst it was just the norm, you know, before he retired and went away, and that now he's come back, and you kind of now expect him to be somewhere 5th to 10th, don't you, in qualifying. You don't really expect him to be up there, and it is a shame that kind of his irrational moments have kind of meant that he wasn't on the front, because I think if he'd started pole, it would have been quite interesting to see if he could have held his nerve for the whole race and actually won it.
That's probably what I'm getting at, in a way, that Schumacher from pole and Monaco
would have been unstoppable.
Well,
is that
his record there
is,
oh, he probably would have driven into a wall in the last
or someone
years,
else
but, or someone else, but still,
but yeah, his record is almost impeccable there, and he knows a thing or two about leading from the front. He's done it for, you know, what, 7 years solidly. He managed to do that, but the thing about Schumacher that resonates for me, a friend of mine said something the other day when we were talking about this, and he said, reminds him of Michael Jordan, when Michael Jordan came back out of retirement in basketball. I know it's a bit of a cross thing, but you sit there and you look and you think, why have you come back? You don't need the money, because you're set for life. You had a great legacy left behind you. What are you missing? And if it is genuinely he's missing the fact that he loves racing, then he needs to actually start racing and not making silly mistakes. He needs to just concentrate a bit more. Yeah, it's great to see him back at the front of the grid, but if he can't sustain that into a race finish, you know, or even a high-placed race finish or a victory, then what's he really doing there? Why isn't he making way for a younger driver to come through? Because there's plenty of young talent out there.
Certainly is. I would argue that Michael Jordan was still phenomenally successful when he came back, whereas Schumacher hasn't quite managed it. But that's for our new NBA podcast that might well come out in about 4 years' time. You never know. I tell you what, I'll ask first. Gents, I asked this of everyone who was in on the podcast last time. Do you have a favourite team, favourite driver, who you kind of support in this field? I know it's not quite the same as football, but is there someone that stands out for you?
Not really a favourite driver, but I kind of like watching Perez at the moment, because he's a bit more edgy and you never know what's going to happen. I mean, he was the most daring at the weekend. For example, you saw him constantly, you know, down the inside, forcing people out of his way, anything to overtake. And although he got one drive through penalty for, you know, being a bit erratic, there's something quite good about watching him. And you can see that if he had a faster car, that he could actually do something, and maybe that's something that might happen in the future, especially with the relationship he's got with Ferrari at the moment.
Which was the second race? My mind's gone blank. Where Alonso won?
Is it Malaysia?
Malaysia, yeah, thank you. I've not quite forgiven him for Malaysia and not winning that race because I still think he should have done. But
should have pushed it a bit.
He's not.
I think that came down to team orders, though, with Sauber being Ferrari. You've kind of.
Couldn't scupper his Ferrari drive. How about you, Carl?
I'm a Hamilton fan.
Lewis Hamilton.
I mean, I sort of follow Interesta as well, sort of British drivers, but mainly a Hamilton fan, really.
Team-wise, does that make you a McLaren man?
Yes,
we've had quite a few McLaren men through these, but not through these wars.
But more drivers.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, well, one of the drivers that caught our eye last time out was obviously Pastor Maldonado, because he did something I think a lot of us thought he wasn't particularly close to doing, which was a cold, calculated, mature drive in Barcelona. And then he went and did what he did in Monaco, which is basically try and take the front end off Perez. And it's just erratic, wasn't it?
It was stupid. Every way you look at it, there's no way this comes out where that was a good decision. Absolutely not. Every single outcome from this, it was a ridiculous thing to do. And in practice, I mean, it's not like he scuppered him on a hot lap in qualifying where you can understand it and make your blood boil. It's practice. And yes, it's time limited. And yes, you've got set amount of tyres and you want to get your telemetry right and you need to know how you're going to run for the weekend. But I mean, just to clip someone like that, it was so childish. And it was almost like the polar opposite of the calm, calculated quality that we saw out of him back in Barcelona. It was ridiculous.
Consistency, that's what separates the class drivers from the not-so-class drivers. Pastor does have form, has to be said, with what happened in Spa last year, when I personally think he should have been chucked out of the whole weekend. But there we go. Never know, we'll soon see the pattern as to which is the more usual Pastor Maldonado and what we get in future. We sort of had a brief touch on the race earlier. I mean, was it the most disappointing race of the season so far, or have we just been spoilt, Carl, with the five races beforehand?
We've been spoilt, yeah. I mean, if you'd have looked back and seen the final standings and top five within a few seconds of each other, you look back and forth, that's a pretty good Monaco race.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But yeah, we have been spoiled over the last year and a bit. And that's it. We were always sort of waiting for something to happen, really waiting for the rain, which kind of caused everybody to go longer on the super softs. And it's just a race waiting something to happen.
Exactly. It never quite did. Well, I think it rained, it chucked it down, didn't it, after they'd finished?
I think about 10 minutes, 20 minutes afterwards, it absolutely chucked it down. But if that had happened, you know, with 10, 15 laps of the race left, then it could have made it, not change the events, but it could have just made it a bit more exciting and a bit more interesting. But I do think we've been spoiled in the sense that last year, the first five or six races was pretty much Vettel just driving around, winning it, and not much else. There was excitement, but all the excitement happened further down the track. But this year, it's been a bit more exciting because anyone can probably win the World Championship. Whilst last year, at this stage, it was pretty much said and done, even though, you know, mathematically it wasn't. You couldn't really see any of the other teams recovering and beating Red Bull.
Absolutely. Absolutely spot on, John. Six race winners in six races. And there are some guys who probably should have won a race who haven't done yet. Well, what does this say, Perry? What does it say?
It says that everyone's closed the gap on everyone else, but it also does now speak to the quality of the drivers that we have in Formula One paddock. Whereas before, I mean, we're talking of a good few years ago, you'd have one or two or three names that were big names at the front that you always, you know, thought they're the guys it was going to be battled out between. But never did you really have such parity in the field. It was never so wide open as it is now. And that's also, as you say, because you've got names that you're not surprised, I mean, you're surprised with a couple of them, Pastor, that they've made it to the top step. But there are other ones like Nico Rosberg. Some people would say that was long overdue, that he's shown the pace and he's shown the quality to have been a race winner before. So you've got to kind of wonder, at what point do you draw the line and say, okay, these are the only guys that we're going to be able to win? And then someone like, you know, a Williams or possibly even the Sauber of Perez comes across the line in first place soon.
And then you think, okay, well, that's another guy who's thrown his hat into the ring. Where does this end? It certainly keeps it exciting, no doubt about it.
It's probably further down the field, isn't it, that the championship will be decided, almost certainly. Got Fernando Alonso leads it at the moment, 3 points ahead of Vettel and Webber together. I love the idea that those two are on the same level of points at the moment. That's going to be fascinating, especially when you consider that Mark Webber is out of contract, if you like, at the end of the season. There's already been a few murmurs about possible Ferrari drives.
Yeah. Well, Webber's always out of contract because he only signs one-year contract.
That's very true.
But, I mean, you'll notice that if it is the case, and if he does go to Ferrari, you'll notice he's, I hate to use the phrase, fair-weather driver, but as long as Red Bull were eons ahead of everyone else, he's happy to stay there. And the moment that it looks like other teams are catching up to them, he might want to move on. But part of... it is harsh, but one of the things that strikes me and why I don't think he'll go to Ferrari is, I think it was last season or maybe even the season before, Webber won a race and he said to his engineers over the radio, not bad for a number two driver. He hates the fact that he's been given that label as Seb Vettel's backup. Well, what does he think he's going to be if he goes to Ferrari? Does he really think that they're going to let him compete against Fernando Alonso? The idea is ridiculous.
I wonder the difference in Webber's respect for Vettel and Webber. I wonder if that might come into it. We'd have to see. It's interesting with Red Bull. They are top of the Constructors' Championship at the moment, 38 points clear of McLaren. I mean, through all the muddying, Red Bull is still, according to the statistics, the most consistent team to date.
I think the thing is that McLaren probably would be up there if it wasn't for Button's had a few dodgy races, and that's kind of put him out, because I think Lewis Hamilton's pretty much been the most consistently up there driver, but he just hasn't, you know, he hasn't got, you know, enough wins or enough second places. He's kind of on the podium but not, you know, really in there. But and that's what's held McLaren back, whilst Vettel and Webber have both, you know, been up there and they've been fairly consistent, even though Red Bull overall have kind of struggled with the changes in regulations, and that's why they're not miles ahead, because of they've struggled, and that's kind of meant the other teams have either Red Bull have kind of like gone backwards or the other teams have kind of pushed forward, and you know that's why they've got more cars. I mean, because Lotus last year they were close, but they were still, you'd say, second tier, whilst now you can see them pushing a bit more forward and getting good grid places and podiums.
Absolutely. I suppose Lewis Hamilton just needs a mistake-free weekend from McLaren and then maybe he'll get the win that the way he's driving clearly deserves. Just a couple of our local points. Let's have a little word on Caterham. It was a big weekend for them from the start, really, because there are only a handful of races where they are going to finish high enough to affect their top... their getting their 10th spot in the Constructors' Championship. Monaco is always one of them. They had a great race, as good probably as Heikki Kovalainen has performed in the car. He was 13th. He kept Jenson Button behind him all race, pretty much, which Jenson wasn't particularly pleased with by the end of it, but I don't think there was much wrong in what happened. Great effort from him, wasn't it, Carl?
Yeah, I think Kovalainen's done well all season. I think even in qualifying, I think he's nearly a second ahead of Petrov. And also he made Vettel and Raikkonen put an extra set of super soft tyres. So yeah, I think Kovalainen's done well since he's gone to Caterham or Lotus or...
Yeah, whichever guys. There has been a few.
I didn't actually see the... Because Button obviously pulled out 10 laps ago, wasn't it? But I didn't actually see him crash. I don't know if he just sort of seemed like he parked up and...
I think he got a knock from a clash earlier in. I mean, Heikki pitted earlier, so Jensen tried to stay out a bit longer and extend the gap so he could get a pit stop in and out, but didn't happen, which is a clear mark of the pace that the Caterham had around Monaco compared to a McLaren. I mean, it's ridiculous. I know they're extenuating circumstances at Monaco, but still.
I think it's a little bit of, sort of two sides of the same coin. You could say that, yes, Caterham showed good pace, but at the same time, the McLaren wasn't showing very good pace at all. I love watching Heikki Kovalainen drive, and I have done ever since he went to Caterham and even when they were Lotus, purely because the guy's always got a smile on his face, and that seemed to be lacking when he was driving for McLaren. Sometimes the pressure, and he was quite obviously, you know, they were bringing him along to be Lewis's number two. And sometimes the pressure of those big drives, and, you know, you've got to get the podiums, you've got to get the wins, and you've got to help your teammate and things like that. And to go to a team that, to say they're not expecting to win, I think is a fair comment, because they've got to be realistic about what they're doing. But it's obvious they're making progress, and it's obvious that they're catching up. It's just the fact that the midfielders this year have made such a big leap forward. Yeah. But you can see that he's really enjoying himself behind the wheel of that car, which is really good to see.
I think he's been miraculously consistent, Heikki, in the car. This is the final year of his 3-year contract. And I know he's employed some agents to look after his personal situation while he concentrates on the driving. I think Caterham might have a little bit of a battle trying to keep hold of him for next year. That said, there aren't exactly a wealth of Formula One drivers and seats around.
I think it all depends on who leaves and who moves on, because you don't know who's going to leave Formula One completely and who's going to move forward. For example, if Perez was to go to Ferrari, then that opened up the Sauber drive, which is something realistically you could see Kovalainen going to, but you don't realistically see him going back to a big team because of, again, like you said, at McLaren, he kind of struggled. So you don't really see him going there. So it's, you know, Caterham are in that lucky position where out of, you know, the three newer teams, they're the ones who actually pushed on developing and actually done well, whilst you see Marussia still just kind of, you know, parade round, just getting in people's way rather than actually racing.
It's funny, Marussia, and apparently they mentioned in the press the other week they're contemplating the fact that they might need to get Kurz next season. To be honest, I would have said that's essential tomorrow. But there we go. Brilliant on Caterham. Well done, the guys at Hingham. Fantastic result. Should we go to the Hethel-backed outfit, Lotus? Their 500th race. This is not the 500th race of Lotus. This is the 500th race of the team at Enstone that we all probably know as Renault, and the various guys as all before that. It's a long, convoluted story, but we'll call them Lotus for now. I'd kind of tip them for the second race running, I have to say, to win. I might not do that again in Canada, although I still think they've probably got a good chance. I mean, this was a good car. It should have had the pace. And in the end, Romain Grosjean did kind of prove it had the pace in qualifying. But he goes out on the first lap again. It's not the first time that's happened. Kimi Raikkonen never really gets up with the leaders and can't make progress. And that's it for a team that had been doing quite well. It was not a great weekend for them, was it?
I think Raikkonen sort of struggled all weekend. The Thursday morning, came up with his power steering problem again. I'm sure he didn't do any running in the first practice.
That's right, yeah. He opted for them to replace or tweak the steering rather than just get out and try and do some running.
But sometimes you kind of think that he doesn't give things enough of a try. He's got a bit of a reputation in the past for doing that, such as Malaysia a couple of years ago, where everyone else was sitting on the grid and he was, you know, out of the car eating an ice cream. You know, so he's got previous on that. And from what I understand, he went out, he did a lap or two and just went, no, I don't like what you've done to the car, change it all. And then he didn't get any more running, whilst he could have actually tried the car out for the rest of the actual practice. And then if he didn't like it after an hour, then change it. But instead, he did a couple of laps. And then with, I think it was 50 minutes to go of the practice session, just went, no, just change it. And I don't think that time would have been more valuable for him to have tried it out on track and then come back in and said change it if he didn't like it, rather than just an immediate reaction of, I don't like it, change it. But I think, as well, because of Kimi has this kind of reputation, Lotus kind of feel that they have to, you know, go with his whims and
keep him on side
because he is a more temperamental driver than some of the other ones. You know, you kind of get the feeling that Grosjean, you see him 95% of the time walking around with a smile on his face, and you kind of feel that attitude, whilst there's always that thing with Kimi that you don't know. On a good day, he's amazing, but if he's not really with it and he doesn't really feel it, he just, you know, kind of swans off and just does as he feels.
Absolutely.
I think with regard to the steering, I think if it was another track, it's possible the team would have said, you know, give it some time. But considering this is Monaco, it's your first time running around there in a couple of years, and, you know, it's so tight, it's so close, it's twisty in places, and the road is so uneven. I think that if a driver comes to you over the radio and says, I don't like this, I can't work with it, for that race at least, you kind of can understand why they said, all right, we'll change it and we'll put you back into your comfort zone. If it had been, you know, say we were in Snoresville of Valencia, you know, maybe at that point they'd say, well, actually, do you know what? Give it a try and see how it comes out. But I can understand why they did it. But still, I mean, like you, Michael, I'd tipped Lotus to do particularly well at this race, and Grosjean was my hope, and seeing him get pranged at the first corner was heartbreaking, really. So
heartbreaking and deja vu, probably. Both of them. Okay, let's have a wrap around, shall we, have some of our regular questions for you guys to answer. Keep them as brief or as long as you wish, it's fine. The first one here I've got is key to the race or a highlight of the race. I haven't quite decided whether to have them as separate questions, so we will start with Joel. Your highlight or the key to the race, the thing that stood out for you?
I just really think just seeing kind of Webber dominate it and keep it out. You never thought that he was going to lose it. Once they started, you kind of thought he got around the first corner in first position, and he kind of kept his nerve and he was in command. He was checking to see when Vettel, if he had the jump on him over the pit stops, and he was pushing to make sure that he had that gap. So I think just him commanding it was kind of the highlight.
Absolutely, good stuff, Carl.
I thought the key was probably the first corner accident, which allowed Vettel for his strategy to work. Mm. And probably the highlight was probably Lewis Hamilton's radio regarding the pit bulls falling
on top of him. Oh, that's exactly what I was going to say. Spot on. Absolutely. I don't know if many drivers have had pit board slips fall on them, repeatedly dropped on their head. Doesn't bode well, does it?
No.
Perry?
I think my key to the race was, I mean, we've kind of touched around it a little bit. My key to the race was strategy, which it has to be at Monaco. And if you want to know how important strategy is, just look at poor Jean-Éric Vergne. I mean, that's the key to it right there. You put on the wrong tyres at the wrong time because you think the rain is coming, and you might as well just stick it in reverse. But as has been said, Webber commanded the race so well, was always calm, was always in control, and the Red Bull garage are very good at their pit stops. I mean, they're not the best in the paddock anymore. I'd have to tip my hat to Ferrari on that. I'd say Ferrari are pulling out the best pit stops at the moment. But in terms of strategy, getting their guys in and out and getting them where they need to be on the track, there is no one better at the moment in terms of strategy than Red Bull, and they worked it perfectly this weekend.
That's a fair point there. Okay, driver and team of the weekend. Now, I always think these are going to be the same thing, but I got pleasantly surprised last time. So, driver and team, Kyle, what do you reckon? You're not allowed to say Lewis and McLaren.
No,
I'll
go Alonso.
No, you can if you want.
I'm going to go Alonso for driver of the day.
Okay.
So, I think this, especially at the start of the race, he seemed to drop off behind Hamilton and seemed to be holding up Massa, which seemed quite strange. And then as the sort of the pit stop time came up, he sort of gradually closed up to Hamilton and then used them, which is assuming he saved the tyres, then a few laps to leapfrog them. And also, I think if he'd stayed out longer, he could have won the race.
Well, I was going to say, there's a suggestion if he'd stayed out two or three laps longer before his pit stop, then he would have actually apparently won the race.
Yeah, I think they're probably just happy with a one-place gain.
Yeah, they seem to be.
I think probably Force India, I think, done quite well. Because they didn't seem to have much pace during the weekend, but yeah, 7th and 8th, it was.
Indeed, yeah.
Which is not bad.
Not only this weekend, in terms of pace, have to say, as well. John?
I think I just enjoy watching Perez, and I think he was really good. But actually, for the whole weekend, I'm going to be a bit controversial and go for Massa, because he had a lot to prove, and you didn't see him get kind of like left behind. He got into the top 10 qualifying. He was being held up by Alonso for quite a bit of time, and that's the best I've seen him drive this year, or best actually probably since his accident.
Yeah.
He even said, you know, there's a lot of pressure on, there's a lot of rumours that Ferrari are going to kick him out. He's probably definitely gone at the end of the season. But whether or not they'll get rid of him mid-season is hard to tell. But I think he had a lot to prove and he had a lot of pressure on him, and he kind of lived up to it more than I expected.
Oh, that's a really good shout, really good shout.
I've been stitched right up here because my driver was going to be Massa and my team was going to be Force India. But I've got something in reserve. I've got something in reserve because you and I have talked before about how we both think Force India are not where they need to be, and they're not where they should be. They should have taken that step forward. They should have been faster. They should be putting in more consistent finishes, and they should be higher in the championship right now. Hopefully this weekend is going to be the start of them doing that on a regular basis. as has so eloquently been put, I can't put it any better than that about Massa. He came in under pressure, he showed determination, he showed heart, he showed no quit at all, and he brought it through. But what I'm going to do, my reserve on this, I'm actually going to say, team of the weekend, Mercedes, driver of the weekend, Nico Rosberg. Mercedes showed they've got the pace. Schumacher managed to put it on pole, albeit he had it taken away. That's understandable. But the car's fast. And Rosberg, you've got Webber ahead of you, so you're concentrating on trying to catch him around Monaco. And you've got Alonso in your mirrors. Now, that's pressure. And for the young guy who's only had the one win under his belt and such, what have you, he's always going to be in the shadow of Schumacher until Schumacher leaves that team, whether he's more successful than him or not. And I think to show that poise and to bring it home in second place, Rosberg, hats off to you.
No problem with that. No problem with that. It's a good shout. It's a good first shout. Never mind reserve shout. Okay. It's all good stuff. Yeah, good mention of Paul Di Resta as well. I think he took 14th on the grid to 7th at the line. It's not bad, is it? And he is probably outperforming the car, I would argue. We'll see how that one pans out over the rest of the season. As I said, Heikki, I think, did a cracking job too. So, let's have a little look forward, shall we? No, I'll tell you what we'll do before that, we'll go a quick mention of the GP2 feeder series. It's the feeder series that travels with Formula 1 to most of the Grand Prix weekends, and it features a host of Norfolk connections as well. And it has to be said that Monaco was a good weekend too. Firstly, and most importantly, was Jolyon Palmer, who is the son of Snetterton owner Jonathan Palmer. He owns the track. He took victory in Sunday's sprint race. That was for Carlton Road's iSport team, good old Norfolk team. So well done to you guys. His teammate Marcus Ericsson also took second in Saturday's feature race. So they had a cracking weekend, their best of the season to date by far. Hingham's Caterham Racing, which is the sister team of the Formula One outfit, they had a good one as well. Guido van der Garde, he finished third in both races, and he is quite high up in the drivers' standings too. So good on them. Lotus have a team they're backing as well. Obviously, they're not based in Norfolk because that's not how Lotus works. They're based in France, and that is Lotus ART. And James Calado took second and a fourth from the two races. That team is currently second in the team's championship, with Caterham fifth and iSport seventh. And I know for a fact those teams rate where they finish in that quite highly. So that's going to be an interesting one to follow throughout the rest of the season. Round 6 of the 12 in 2012 is at Valencia, next for the European Grand Prix, which is in on June the 22nd to the 24th. But that is missing out Formula One's little trek to North America, Montreal and the Circuit Gilles Villeneuve on June the 8th to the 10th. And this is, of course, where Jenson Button won from the back of the grid in about 12 laps or something stupid. And he took it from the back of the grid to the front. The rain came down. It's the reason why we have an 8-hour time limit on races now, because I still remember sitting in front of the television for 3 hours watching rain. It wasn't a lot of fun. The ending was. It was a brilliant race there last year. All the teams will be taking their low downforce packages. It's going to all be about whipping through the air as quickly as you can. It should be a cracking race. So what I'm going to ask for you guys is just a little note on who your money's on and who you think might come out on top. Never an easy question. So Perry, I'll start with you.
I've had this one ready to go from the outset. This is Lewis Hamilton's race. Lewis Hamilton loves this circuit. He absolutely loves this track. He loves smashing it around there. The McLaren has pace. Lewis has pace in the McLaren. And he's going to absolutely own it. I have ultimate faith Lewis Hamilton's going to take this race to the cleaners.
It's going to be a car that has a decent top speed, that's for sure. Go on then, Carl.
I agree. I mean, he's shown, well, apart from last year, he's pretty quick around there. So him and Button can keep
before
each other's
the back of his teammate. Yeah.
They should be right. I think Lotus again. I think every weekend you kind of think, oh, they're going to do it this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to become a running theme, that one, if it doesn't happen.
We don't really know how quick the Lotus car is either, because it's quite hard to judge. Obviously, Raikkonen coming back, and Grosjean obviously coming back into it. So it'll be interesting to see if you had like a Hamilton, Vettel, or Alonso in the car, if they could do any better. Mm. But I think it'll be Hamilton victory, I hope.
To Lewis. See, John?
For me, I was going to go for either Hamilton or Rosberg, because I kind of think that the Mercedes car is keeps on proving that it's fast. And it's just to see a track with a faster, you know, faster corners, higher speed, if they can actually do something. And I think Rosberg is, he keeps on looking like a better and better driver race by race. So, you know, he's very experienced, even though it seems like he hasn't been around for long, but he's done over 100 Grand Prix. So he's very experienced. It's just to see if he can start picking up some more wins now. And I think now that he's got one under his belt, and he showed on Sunday that he's got the composure when he's got pressure and people around him, that hopefully someone like him will be able to, you know, win. But again, if McLaren have a fast car, then you can't really knock Lewis Hamilton.
Exactly. It did take Nico Rosberg about 20 years, didn't it, to get his first race, I suppose. The old special DRS, of course, around Canada.
Yeah.
I think, which they can use a lot more in for the whole lap in qualifying. I think if a Mercedes isn't on the front row, more pole, then I'd be very surprised. So that's my prediction. I don't know if I want to go into the race.
Oh, come on.
Well, I think Lewis would be, I think he's due a win. If McLaren can just not muck it up for a weekend, hopefully Lewis will do the business.
And keep Rihanna away, because I'm pretty sure that's the reason why he just parked it last year, because he knew Rihanna was in the pits. He just wanted to go and hang out with her. Yeah. I mean, that's probably what I'd do. So yeah, just possibly keep her away, and then he won't have anything but the track to focus on. It'll be fine.
Is she booked in? Do we know?
I'll get on to her agent. I'll find out.
We'll get our guys on to that.
We'll cancel it if she is. We'll tell her no. We'll just tell her no. He's hanging out with Will Smith too much. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
We'll get a ticket out there. We could do that. Brilliant stuff. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Perry, thank you.
My pleasure.
And to you, Kyle, thank you. And John.
Thank you very much.
Top guys, thank you so much for coming in and chatting through the race weekend. As always, throughout the season, you can get full Lotus and Caterham coverage on the Eastern Daily Press website. Our Formula One page is edp24.co.uk/F1. You can also read my weekly column in there, which also goes in the Eastern Daily Press every Wednesday. We also have a link to the EDP F1 podcasts, which we are getting together as we speak, and they will also be on iTunes very soon. So once I can get Pete to give me the proper link and we get that all looking good, I will make sure you're all aware of that too. You can get in touch with us. I think we're all on Twitter. I am at Michael J. Bailey. Perry?
I am at PEDHD56. That's PEDHD56.
That's beautifully
put. Numbers. Numbers, 5-6.
Kyle?
I'm at K-Cumbers. That's K-C-U-M-B-E-R-S.
There you go. And John?
I'm at John Luton, J-O-N-L-U-T-O-N.
No H!
No H.
I'm getting it wrong. Brilliant stuff. So you can all get us on Twitter if you want to just talk to us or abuse us. I've been called all names under the sun. Mostly football fans, but if you want to become F1 fans who are abusing me, that's fine. But you can say nice things too. It's all good. You can also email us at the podcast. Apparently Pete says that has to be my personal email address to work. So that is michael.bailey@archant.co.uk. You can get your questions, comments and contributions in on that. We've got a few future things planned for the podcast, which hopefully we'll be introducing, so bear with us. I hope you're enjoying it, and hopefully we'll have you involved in and contributing soon. Thanks as always for listening, and we will be back after Canada. Enjoy yourselves.